Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We've got a two-part question here, but why don't you go ahead and read it?
Sure. Question one, do you have any advice for not overcomplicating the correct answer choice during logical reasoning questions, specifically assumption questions? Okay. Sometimes I look at the correct answer and I think it's too simple or obvious, so I choose the more complicated answer.
Wow.
Geez, there's a lot going on.
Let's answer this one first before we move on to number two. You've got to learn. It's one of the most important lessons you can learn on the LSAT that if it seems too simple, if it seems too obvious, that's because that's the answer.
Yeah.
The LSAT's easy.
Yeah.
And it, more and more, as you do the LSAT more and more, as you get better and better at it, you're going to be like, well, duh, it's got to be that. It can't be any of these other bullshit answers. That one answers the question. And if it seems too good to be true, you got to go, yeah, well, that's because the LSAT's easy. Not because it's a trap, but because the LSAT's easy.
Or complicated, as this person says. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say here, though, is that did you catch that, you know, they just referred to assumption questions.
Yeah. So you're concerned about question type in a way that you don't need to be concerned. Like the fact that you're getting stuck between answers doesn't really have to do with question types. And then when you refer to question types, you're saying assumption questions, but there's necessary assumption questions and there's sufficient assumption questions and they're totally different.
Totally different. Two totally different question types. I mean, one of them is like a super strengthen.
Yeah.
And the other one is like a must be true.
Yeah.
Sufficient assumption questions are like strengthen the argument so that the conclusion has to be true. It's like fantasize, come up with the perfect strengthener that would win this case.
Yeah.
And then on necessary assumption questions, it's totally different. It's like, don't fantasize. Pick an answer that has to be true, according to that author.
Yeah.
And it's not about winning the argument. It's about, really, it's more about the avoidance of loss. Like, this has to be true or else this argument can't possibly go anywhere. The author has to agree that this is true. Based on what they've already said, they have to agree with this thing. Mm-hmm. That's a necessary assumption. And so you talking about assumption questions, but then not differentiating between those two, it indicates that, yeah, exactly. Like Ben said, you're focusing on question types, but you're not even really understanding those types. So it's probably hurting you more than it's helping you.
Yeah.
Number two.
I've also been having anxiety about the application process due to the polarized political climate. How significantly do law schools consider an applicant's social media presence or other activism they may do, like signing a petition, particularly in light of the Israel-Palestine conflict, where law students are experiencing job offers being rescinded and students being labeled as anti-Semitic or doxxed on certain websites.
Okay. And Eric, producer Eric, has a bunch of links here. There's one from The Guardian about students who signed on to some letter getting U.S. law firm jobs revoked. Another one from CBSnews.com, Arab American attorneys job offers being rescinded. One from Reuters, anti-Israel comments prompt Winston Strawn to rescind NYU law students' job offer. So sure, there's a lot of this out there. Do you think that anonymous correspondent should be worried about it?
Well, it sounds like anonymous has signed something, right?
Signed a petition, maybe made social media posts.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure, wow. I would say made social media posts. I mean, I'll just tell you that one of the first things that people do in 1L is that, and they are counseled to do so by the school, is that they go in and they just like shut down all their social media. Like you just don't need to be on social media, period. Mm-hmm. You're going to be an attorney. You're going to be an advocate for other people. You weaken yourself by having a bunch of shit out there online about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about you. It's about the client. It's about the case. It's about the facts. It's about the law. It's about the case. And you having your own personal political views out there in the world is just that. That's something that is not like professional. You see that happen. I mean, did it happen even when you were in law school, right? People had Facebook profiles. Mm-hmm. But then they were like, yeah, no, change my name. I'm going to make that be my alt or whatever. And I'm going to have like a professional profile on LinkedIn or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not going to have politics on it. So, and then all my personally identifiable social stuff, it's real frequent that people just shut all that shit down.
Yeah, well, you can make it private.
Trying to practice law.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So are you suggesting that this correspondent do that? Just make their accounts private?
Yes.
Some of these things may be publicly available and not, right?
Yeah, but, you know, this is somebody who's still currently just studying for the LSAT, right? So, like, they're not applying for a while. They're not doing character and fitness stuff for the bar for, like, years from now. You're going to have years in between what you've ever done in the past and what you're going to do in the future. Mm-hmm. So I would say, like, step one is you got to anonymize all that shit. Make it private. Change your name on it. Take it offline. Sorry that I'm advising you to not live according to your political principles or whatever. But I do know, I mean, we have lots and lots of evidence that you're taking positions, you're putting yourself out there, like you're putting yourself on the record as having a position on an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that can't hurt. Sorry, it can't help you. Like, it can only hurt you. And so you should probably just shut all that shit down.
Yeah.
Like, do you think big law attorneys are allowed to be just posting about politics on Facebook?
I know some do, but it's going to be it's going to be reviewed, and it's going to be viewed in light of, does this help the firm? And so when you say politics, right, it's like, okay.
You're representing the firm.
Yeah.
If they're going to employ you, your words are, it's really, really important.
Yeah.
It reflects on the firm. Yep. And you're going to have some 80-year-old dude. You're going to be using his name. And so, like, his name is on your business card.
Yep.
And, you know, your name is now associated with him. Your name is associated with the firm.
Yeah.
And if your name is associated with a bunch of objectionable shit, which all politics is kind of objectionable.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you're going to have your fans, and then you're going to have your haters. Right.
So. Yeah. I don't think it matters what side of the conflict you're on. I just think if you want to be an attorney, if you want to be an advocate for other people, it's probably a good idea to start cleaning all of that public presence. You got to get that stuff off the internet.
Yeah.
It will be used against you, right? Like, I mean, that's in any like court case, some of the most compelling evidence is just, well, let's look at what the person said.
Yep.
And that's why people are really careful about the emails that they send. And the posts, I mean, probably when in doubt, don't post. Thanks for writing in. Please email daily@lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.